Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Matt Eberflus has been fired. We will detail that and more coming up on Alice Intrigue. Jason, I think we knew it was coming. We weren't sure quite when, but it happened on Friday. The Bears let Matt Eberflus talk to us at 9 o'clock, and then 2 hours later told him that his services were no longer needed. Are you surprised?
A little. It's the right call. The Bears don't always make the right call. And I don't know how you can say you're not at least a little surprised when they haven't. This is the first time in 105 years they've done this. I read something today that the only other time they have changed coaches during a season was in, I believe, 1942. When
is this a World War II reference?
George Halas went to serve in the Navy, I believe it was. But they, either way, they've, even if I don't quite have those details correct, I apologize, but they have never fired a coach during a season. So while any normal team would have done it by now at the latest, if not going back to maybe 19-3 loss at home to New England, it was totally time for it for the Bears. And they could not have proceeded like this. And it was a really, I mean, what a weird day, honestly, because
even by their standards, even.
Yeah. Let me get them through Thursday night and then you take over with what happened Friday morning. Cause even as the Bears do the right thing, they often do it the wrong way. And so the game in Detroit ends, and all of you have seen this now. This was not the reason Matt Eberflus got fired. It was another log on the fire. It was another on a long list of negatives on his ledger. But he botches the clock at the end of that game. And long story short, game ends on an incomplete pass. Time expires. He goes to the locker room still holding the timeout that he could have used to bail out his rookie quarterback. Doubles down on the strategy Thursday night. In Detroit during that time, you go through their locker room. It is just totally resigned. Not even really that mad anymore. Just kind of like, well, what is going on here? And that appears to be the question that Ryan Poles, George McCaskey, and Kevin Warren were asking themselves on the flight home. That gets us to Friday morning, Pet.
Well, let's stay with Friday night, Jason, or Thursday night. I was in Detroit. I decided to drive home super late because I was concerned that there might be a news event at Halas Hall that we would have to cover. You changed your flight to be home super early on Friday morning because we're on alert. And we are on alert knowing the franchise's history. We are on alert knowing George McCaskey's preferences. But what we have seen is disturbing enough to make us think that it could happen. And then Matt Eberflus.
And I think, by the way, like if we can just kind of promote our work for a second here. If you were reading the Sun Times, especially if you're reading our coverage of the game, that came through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was conveyed in everything we were writing that this 100-something-year-old policy might not still be in place. And it's pushed to the point where there's at least a conversation happening about what to do.
Yes. And there was. You and I are both in position. It's 8:30 and Matt Eberflus has a 9 a.m. Zoom call scheduled with us, previously planned.
Yeah. Where were you set up for this, Pet?
My basement. So as to not wake up my father, who is visiting from thousands of miles away, and my kid and my wife, because they were all nice enough to sit in the car with me until 1 a.m. last night.
Those people love you, man. Those people love you that they rode round trip to Detroit with you and drove in the middle of the night over this. I was set up at United Airlines baggage claim at O'Hare.
Oh, was that baggage claim? I saw the
that was my temporary office.
Yeah. So they had.
Would you thought that was like my den or my house?
No.
I like to have my man cave look exactly like United Airlines baggage claim at O'Hare Terminal 1.
Did you check a bag, or is that just where you stop?
I always check a bag. It's a bad habit.
Really? I didn't know that about you. Okay.
Bad habit. I'm trying to change. So anyway,
you just not want to.
We usually get the – we have – so Zoom call day after game with Matt Eberflus, that's not weird. It's that's how they've done it after road games this season. And it's actually, like, I think done for our convenience so that we don't have to try to make it back from a Sunday night football game in L.A. first thing the next morning. Typically, we get the link for that, like, the day before.
Yeah, or the morning. Yeah, hours ahead.
But you're sitting there at 8:30. Where is it? 8:45. 8:59. Why haven't we seen this yet? A couple minutes after 9.
Yeah, correspondence is sent to the Bears who do not respond. And you wonder, hey, are we going to do this? Or are we going to not do this? And Matt Eberflus, we get the Zoom link. Matt Eberflus shows up at 9:02 or 9:03, something like that, and proceeds to answer questions about what exactly is going on. You and I thought did a really good job of saying, hey, are you still employed? How's that whole thing going?
Well, let's come back to that later.
Okay.
That's a key point in this decision that they made today.
Yeah. So he does about 9 minutes in which I would say maybe a good half the questions are about his job status and the rest are about the drive at the end of the game in which he took a timeout home with him. An hour or two passes.
Okay, but Pat, at that time, if we're doing the timeline, at that time, you and me and everybody else can reasonably assume, well, he's not fired. Why in the world would they bring him out to talk about yesterday's game? Why would they make him a this isn't how it goes. We didn't get a day after game with Matt Nagy when they fired him after the Vikings game at the end of 2021. That's what him showing up and talking would reasonably lead anybody to think, oh, they're not doing anything.
Yes. And one of my favorite John Fox stories was, you know, the last game he coached, they were in Minnesota. And the first question we asked on Sunday, you know, in the press conference room was more or less about whether he thought he'd be fired. And he said, I'll take questions about the Vikings game. And we all went, well, good luck with that. And that was the end of that press conference. So
we asked Matt Nagy, was that in Minnesota, you said?
Yeah, yeah.
Was that at what stadium would that have been?
I think that was the.
Is that when they were playing outdoors? Or Metrodome?
It's either the Metrodome or outdoors. I'm not sure.
Okay. Matt Nagy's last game was there too, and I remember asking him in the and we need to get back the Matt Nagy backstory here is a major factor in why they made the move that they did today with Matt Eberflus. But I remember that at that point, it had been weeks and weeks and weeks of this. And I remember asking Matt Nagy in the final post-game press conference, how are you going to explain the debacle that's happened here to teams that might want to hire you in the future? That's the ugly end to going down a path like this.
What did he say? Do you remember?
He didn't. He didn't really answer it.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out, too, that we try and be as straightforward as we can with our readers. I don't think either you or I get any personal joy out of anything like this.
The coach getting fired? And it's miserable. Yeah. It's miserable. It was totally draining and exhausting and miserable and negative at the end of 2021 with Matt Nagy. And we were really deep into that already with Matt Eberflus. I would say starting with the Arizona game, which is quite a while ago at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the best news about today is that the rest of the season doesn't feel like quite the same slog. You know, everybody on that staff's going to be looking for a job probably before the season ends, but it is just, you know, every day is not a recounting of the head coach's failures. And that'll be different. Let's get back to the
back to our timeline. Yes. So interestingly, Matt Eberflus is on the Zoom call with us while the power players of the organization are meeting to decide his future. And on a day that he's telling us is normal, regular work day today, 2 hours later, he's out of a job.
I have no issue with that. I have no issue with, I mean, I have no issue with the decision made. Had they postponed the Eberflus press conference for 2 hours and then come out and said, guess what? There's not one. I think that might have been the better approach. But the fact is that Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren, who both put their names on a press release in announcing the move, didn't speak today. And it would not have been as simple as, hey, guess who's sitting in Matt Eberflus's seat when the Zoom call starts? You know, it was either, you know, have him talk or have nobody talk. And so what we got was Eberflus defending himself and acting, you know, a pretty matter of fact when, you know, you had said, hey, do you plan on coaching against the Niners? And he went, yeah, just regular, going through regular stuff.
Today. He didn't say that. He didn't say yes, though. It should be a very easy question. Are you coaching the next game? And instead it was like, same process. The coaches are here. It was not a yes or a no.
Yeah, but he said I'm focused on San Francisco. Is what he kept saying, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he might still be. He still has that option right now today as we speak.
So they fire him. Nobody at the Bears is going to talk Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, from what we understand. Jason, at some point though, like, we need to hear the official reason. And we need that put out into the world. I mean, as it stands right now, Thomas Brown is going to talk as the interim coach on Monday. He'll probably have to do Matt Eberflus's contractually obligated coaches show on Monday morning on the radio.
I mean, he'll be good at it. Get him a landline. Great at it. Get him a landline.
It'll be a really weird situation where the first on the record conversation about this comes from the guy who got the job on a radio show. Like, that's not the way these things usually work.
Well, it won't be the weirdest part of all of this, but yes, I do think that I would expect Ryan Poles is going to talk next week. Mm-hmm. He's not hidden from anything really in his 3 years. I remember we saw this from the jump when he got into this stalemate with Roquan Smith in 2022 about his contract, and Roquan demanded a trade. Poles was out there that day in front of the cameras, in front of us, taking questions. So we have not heard from him since London when things were going well. We didn't. It's a notable exception to what I just said, that we did not hear from him after they fired Shane Waldron. Mm-hmm. But at that point, at the point where you fire the head coach, he needs to come out and talk. He needs to come out and take questions. That gives it some legitimacy as opposed to a prepared statement or him just giving a speech or something like that. And I will say, while I wish he was I wish Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren and George McCaskey, I wish they were available every day. Mm-hmm. I get why Ryan Poles would not have talked in the last, 2 weeks since they fired Shane Waldron? Mm-hmm. Because while there would be some question about the Shane Waldron situation, there would probably be a lot, maybe more questions the last couple of weeks about Matt Eberflus. And what is he possibly going to say that isn't a lie?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because everything he's seen on the field the last couple of weeks or last 5 weeks has made him, I'm sure, reconsider everything.
Well, so let's rewind to something here now, to 3 years ago with Matt Nagy and why this factors into what they did. And then I want to talk about Thomas Brown and Caleb Williams and what is really what really matters in the last five games, Pat. Can we go that? Is that a good GPS?
Yes, great.
Setting for you? So you guys probably all remember the end of the Matt Nagy era, where at least the last 6 weeks of the season, it's a given. It's an open secret that he's going to get fired. He knows mm-hmm. it. We know it. The players know it. The whole country knows it. The whole league knows it. And by sticking to this century-old policy of not firing a coach in season, the Bears make a bad situation much worse. And they make it really brutal for Nagy himself to keep going out and coaching and taking questions and being on camera. And we're asking him questions where it's kind of understood between us and him that we're talking about a future he's not going to be a part of. And everybody looks at that around the league. The Bears, for whatever reason, think they're handling that right. The rest of the league is looking at that and laughing at them and saying, what a joke this is. What are mm-hmm. they doing?
Yep.
They were about to repeat that scenario if they just did nothing and waited till the end of the season to fire Matt Eberflus. You can sit here and argue, what's the point? What's the point of firing? I don't think anyone's arguing that today, by the way. Everyone, I think Chicago is very pleased with this decision. But you can sit here and argue, what's the point? You're 4-8. You're not saving this season. Thomas Brown or anybody else probably isn't going 5-0 and sneaking into the playoffs and making a run. It's over. Why bother? Why even? What's the point? What are the stakes? Well, you would go on for 5 more weeks showing that, A, this is acceptable to you, what you've seen. And B, that you're fine with, it's acceptable to you to have this circus of a total lame duck coach that the media knows it, he knows it, and the players know it. And it sure felt like to me, Patrick, Thursday in that locker room in Detroit, it was a tipping point with the locker room. It was the last straw. It was going, he had used up all of the credibility he had in that room, and he was not going to be able to just rally these guys back from yet another game that he was at the center of losing.
Yeah, there were more smirks in the locker room than I remember seeing when you asked about.
That's a great observation. You're exactly right.
Yeah, you know, and I asked Kyler Gordon, hey, what's the common denominator between the way you guys keep losing these games? And he literally goes, no comment, next question. Oh, shoot. Okay, you know, Keenan Allen goes, I think we as players did enough to win. Oh, that's pretty interesting that the word with as players is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. Yeah, it was different. You know, I would argue, or I would make 2 points about the scenario you just laid out with Matt Nagy. Number one is that what was different was that the Bears were planning on firing everybody, including Matt Nagy's immediate boss. And right. That in that case, that decision may have been a little more complicated than it was today. And number two, Ryan Poles, let's keep this in mind. Ryan Poles is friends with Matt Nagy. Ted Cruz, who came over to be Kevin Warren's kind of right-hand man, is friends with Matt Nagy, and they were friends then. And I'm sure that they interpreted what the rest of the league interpreted as cruel, as particularly cruel. That's, you know, and I'm sure that they didn't want to relive that. That said, I think they were willing to at least see this thing through so long as things didn't get more embarrassing. And then in a matter of weeks, they just went from more embarrassing to even more embarrassing to even more embarrassing than that.
I think you get to a point with your locker room where not only do you worry about I don't think guys are going to quit. I don't think guys are just going to go out there in tank tops and flip-flops and not play. They all have financial incentive to play. Every year, half the team is headed toward free agency, and the ones that are not are playing to make sure they get the deal they've already signed instead of getting cut. I mean, there's a lot on the line for NFL players, even at 4-8 with an interim head coach. But I think there's also an element of not only are you trying to, I think there's an element of you're telling your locker room, which there have been complaints out of this locker room, Patrick, publicly since week two or three.
Just about week two, various, Jason.
various ways that things have been mishandled. I think you're telling them, okay, guys, we hear you.
Yep.
We got you. We are not going to make you continue on in an unsuitable workplace. We are fixing it, even if it's really, you know, nothing gained as far as trying to save the season. We are not. We have heard your complaints. We are responding to them. We are changing the boss.
Yeah, and we're replacing the boss with somebody
you probably like.
Who in the last 3 weeks has received pretty universal acclaim from the Bears. Part of that is because Thomas Brown, as the passing game coordinator, kind of wasn't involved in anything formally in the first 10 weeks of the season. He was somebody who helped Shane Waldron, you know, get the pass game together. He's somebody who played nickel corner on the practice squad, which is a fact I love, Jason, to help get the team ready. And then all of a sudden you put him in front of a room and you have Caleb Williams saying, boy, you know, he didn't really know me, but I think he's figured me out pretty well. And you have Cole Kmet saying, you know, I love his energy. And, you know, and you have Caleb talking about his aura and Thomas Brown saying, I don't know what that means, but my kids seem to think that's a pretty cool statement. Like, Brown's personality in the last 3 weeks has really been the most interesting thing about this team. And the fact that it coincides with real production on the field from Caleb made him a compelling storyline with or without this promotion to interim head coach. And now with it, it makes me wonder, like, why mess with a good thing and change what's going on with the offense? But, you know, it also makes me wonder whether the Bears want to see exactly what he can do when he's in charge.
Yeah, I think I agree with what you laid out there in that it's not just that Thomas Brown is a cool guy. He also, the day he stepped in, started making logistical, mechanical changes to the way the offense ran and the way Caleb Williams was coached that made a difference. And you're hearing Caleb tell you that with his voice, and you're seeing him tell you that with 275 yards per game, no turnovers, 5 touchdown passes, a 99-something passer rating, 64% completions the last 3 weeks. And unlike Patrick early in the season when he was doing that against teams with really bad defenses like the Rams and Panthers and Jags, these are top 10 defenses that he has been putting up numbers on. And then on top of that, Pat, this is another reason why I think that the change is worth making and a positive for Caleb.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb would have this reputation right now as like this unbelievably clutch rookie, if not for some late game decisions by Matt Eberflus that squandered his comeback pushes. And it's not guaranteed you win every one of those games. Like yesterday is an example where Caleb Williams, Thursday, I should say, you know, I don't know what day everybody's listening to this, but Thanksgiving against the Lions, Caleb with the game on the line digs them out from inside their own one down to eventually the Detroit 13, I think was the most headway they made.
Yeah, had the Tevin Jenkins penalty not happened, they would have had the ball at the 13. Yep.
He, against Green Bay, completed a, what did he dig out of there? 3rd and 26, I think, at his own end of the field to put them in field goal range. Against Washington, put them ahead going into the final minute of the game. And all three of those were losses that had nothing to do, really. Nah, I shouldn't say nothing to do, but two of them had nothing to do with Caleb Williams. One of them was the Detroit game was much more Matt Eberflus's fault than Caleb Williams. And I don't need us to keep going on about that and whose fault it was. I think we actually agree. I think you wrote this perfectly that basically to paraphrase, I won't do it to justice that you did, but Caleb Williams messed up, but Matt Eberflus messed up more. It's his job to step in and bail out his rookie quarterback from messing up in that situation.
Yeah, Matt Eberflus wasn't savvy enough to save his quarterback. And Matt Eberflus is a guy who's been in the NFL for almost 30 years and who, in theory, has been a head coach for 3. And Caleb Williams is playing his 12th game of his career at the NFL level. Matt Eberflus, by the way, the same coach who I believe the stat, Jason, is that he has the worst winning percentage among the 218 or so coaches who played at least 20 games that were settled by a touchdown or less. That's really impressive.
I am worried. I shouldn't say worried, but I would not have done what the Bears are doing here, putting Thomas Brown as interim coach, for the reason of I don't touch, I don't tinker with, I don't even look the wrong way at an operation that's working really, really well for Caleb Williams. They went into the season where, you know, it's the most important thing is that Caleb is on the right track, and then also the team is built to make the playoffs. And those paths have diverged big time. Forget the playoffs. Forget the team, really. The team is Caleb Williams now for 2025. You are now going to be in year 2 of that rookie contract window. Clock's ticking. You need Caleb Williams to be thriving. And he is right now. And I would have been overly concerned with the idea that I bring Thomas Brown down out of the booth onto the sideline. Hey, you're now in charge of whether or not we go for it on fourth down. You're in charge of challenge flags. You're in charge of timeouts. You're in charge of like keeping an eye on our special teams and defense, make sure they're doing the right thing and interject if you see something that you don't like or you want to do something, you know, in a specific situation. I worry about pulling him away from Caleb Williams. On the flip side, as you mentioned, Thomas Brown has an opportunity to play, to coach his way into candidacy for head coach long term. It's legitimate. This is not like somebody stepping in that is clearly a caretaker. This, conversely, is clearly an audition. And if you are the Bears, really assessing his viability and his strengths as a head coaching candidate, it's better to give him this opportunity, give him all of that responsibility. All of the things you would ask him in an interview a couple months from now about what would you do in this situation? What would you do if you had this on your staff? What would you do, you know, your quarterback gets sacked with 32 seconds left on, in Detroit, and he'll actually have to answer those. It's going to be a lie detector test. It's going to be truth serum over the next five games, because things will happen. Things will happen during the week. Things will happen on Sundays, and he will have to maneuver. And that's a pretty good data bank for the Bears trying to decide what he is. And this guy, again, if you're not familiar with the Thomas Brown resume, he's 38 years old. He is an absolute rising star in his profession. Clearly on his way up, clearly going to be a head coach. And he might, Pat, even if he doesn't get the Bears job, I would say there's a very good chance he's a head coach for somebody next year, especially if this goes well. Thomas Brown comes from all of the places you would want somebody to come from. You know, we always in the NFL, there's this obsession with who are the Belichick guys, who are the McVay guys, who are all of that. If you're obsessed with that, he checks those boxes too. He's a McVay guy. He's a Mark Richt guy from coaching in college. He's been a play caller for the University of Miami. He's been a play caller for the Panthers and now the Bears. There is a little bit, yes. There is a pretty good body of work, and there is a pretty good start to a career for a 38-year-old coach. Somebody is going to want in on Thomas Brown soon.
Yeah, I mean, three different teams have interviewed him to be their head coach in his career, even though he's never spent more than 8 games a season calling plays. I mean, that speaks, I think, to the power of his personality. I think that speaks to the people he has vouching for him. You know, Sean McVay was asked today by Rams reporters about him, and he spent 2 pages worth of material on him about how he thinks he's going to do great. And, you know, everybody in this business knows how volatile it is, but, you know, when you get an opportunity, you got to grab it. He reaches people in a way that, unlike a few people that McVay has ever met, like that's all, you know, that's praise from Caesar, and something that will only help him in this situation. Sean McVay, by the way, his rival in high school at a different high school. They go back to when they were 18 years old.
I think Thomas Brown also a pet. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, good.
Well, I think he's great at coaching this position. I think he's great at coaching quarterback. I shouldn't say that. It is too early to make that leap. And part of it, auditioning him, is the Bears don't have to make that leap right now. They can wait and see how 5 games go. But I will say that in what we've seen, he has done a great job to this point of coaching not only the position, but a young developing quarterback in Caleb Williams. The idea that he has simplified the game for Caleb Williams is really not the right way to say it. He's clarified the game for Caleb Williams. He has coached Caleb. Patrick, this is what kills me, man. You see, now I'm going to start getting mad about all of the mismanagement and dysfunction and bypassing this guy for Shane Waldron in the first place. But he has made the game clearer for Caleb Williams. He has coached it in a way in 3 weeks that has cleared up the way Caleb Williams processes decisions in the pocket. It's enormous.
Caleb Williams has a passer rating of 99 or so under Thomas Brown and 66 or so under in his last 3 games under Shane Waldron. The other thing that's compelling about Thomas Brown is he is a, you know, running backs coach by trade. He was a running backs coach at Georgia, wound up coaching at Wisconsin in Georgia, which had some pretty great running backs.
And he was a running back, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. 2,400 career yards. Yeah. Had his groin ripped off of his bone in his first or his last preseason game of his rookie year with the Falcons, and eventually wound up in coaching. You know, he's also somebody who with the Rams was not only a running backs coach, but a tight ends coach and assistant head coach. Now, you know, somebody who's worked with quarterbacks. This is a guy who has knowledge all over the field. And, you know, that is very different than bringing in kind of a quarterback guru. And it'll be really interesting. I think that if he does well, he can have a really compelling case because he will have answered the biggest question you'd have of anybody coming in the building, which is, can you work with Caleb and can you make Caleb good? And if the answer is yes, I think the Bears have to give it some thought. Boy, it would take a lot of guts by Ryan Poles to look at a culture that was not very good, despite their claims otherwise, and at a performance that was not very good, and say, you know what, I want to take the fifth assistant from the start of the season and stick with him for the next couple of years. But you know, Brown's got a chance to show.
Well, Ryan Poles doesn't have to decide that today, November 29th. That's to his advantage. If you are Ryan Poles and you have now fired Matt Eberflus, you have what you think is a good roster, a star in the making at quarterback, very good draft capital and free agency salary cap space for 2025. So opportunities to get even better, to really get an even more talented and well-rounded roster. You need to get, especially in this short window, Pat, of the rookie contract, you need to get the best offensive coach available. The best, period. Right now, today, that is not Thomas Brown. Right now, today, there would be a lot of guys ahead of Thomas Brown on the list, most notably Ben Johnson and Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinators for the Lions and Texans, respectively. But Thomas Brown has five games to put himself on their level. There is a lot of ground he can make up in these next five games.
Yeah, no, there is. And, you know, if you're the Bears, you have to be careful not to get sucked in by that. You know, let's look at Antonio Pierce with the Raiders, you know, at the end of last season.
Oh, that's totally different. Don't, Patrick.
No, but it's not. At the end of last season,
don't all compare the players him to Antonio Pierce.
In terms of pedigree, he's not. But at the end of last season, all the Raiders players said, we want him. And the Raiders went along with them. I don't think the endorsement of players is enough to keep Thomas Brown.
Oh, no.
As a head coach, it's not just a, hey, the guys like him and we did okay. I think the Bears need to determine that that he checks a lot of boxes for them. And, you know, I think just and it's hard, Jason. You and I think both feel silly kind of talking about this sort of thing. But in the intangibles kind of category, in the way he connects with people and in the way he gets his ideas across, even to people like us, like, boy, he's different. And that doesn't mean he's a superstar, and that doesn't mean that the Bears would be fools for doing something else. But I think the more often we're around Thomas Brown, the more we realize that there is something really unique about him.
It's one piece of the puzzle, and it's something he brings to the table that Matt Eberflus lacked.
Yep.
But as you're evaluating who can be your next head coach, who can get you into championship contention, you need that. You need to be able to. You need a guy that can connect with players. You need a guy that, I mean, there are intangibles that come with having somebody like Mike McDaniel on your sideline or Mike Tomlin on your sideline. I think even Matt LaFleur brings some of that, and Kevin O'Connell and Dan Campbell. Like, there is an element that can't be quantified. You also have to be an expert, elite, brilliant strategist. You have to be a phenomenal manager of a staff. You have to be an incredible quick thinker, smart and decisive in key moments when there is fire all around you, which is the situation where Matt Eberflus has caved repeatedly. You need all of that. And as you're looking at those things, I'm not sure how many of those things Matt Eberflus had coming in or proved to have in his 2+ years on the job. But, you know, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for someone that brings all of that to the table as the next head coach. And advantageously for the Bears, you should really have the most attractive job opening on the market this coming winter. This should be the place all the good candidates want to be.
Yeah. I mean, and you've got, and it's not necessarily, I mean, it's because that you're going to have two draft picks in the top 45. It's because you've got some veterans like DJ Moore and Cole Kmet, Darnell Wright on offense that can really help you. But really, it's because of your quarterback. And that'll be the really interesting thing in the last 5 weeks of the season is kind of the better Thomas Brown gets Caleb Williams, the better this job becomes. And to the point to where it may work against Thomas Brown at some point, where if he's got Caleb playing at a high level, then maybe that attracts a level of coach that could beat out Thomas Brown for the job, in which it wouldn't otherwise.
If that happens, Thomas Brown gets a head coaching job somewhere else at minimum. He will be okay. But what are the jobs that are open right now? Is it Jets and Saints? Is there anything else?
No, that's it. No.
If you talk about some other possible jobs that are open, like Jaguars, Giants, I mean,
right?
There's not going to be anything. Cowboys has its appeal. Like they would in theory have a quarterback if Dak comes back healthy and have a lot of other pieces in place. I don't think there's a job where you look at it as a great opportunity to win right away and sustain it because you have a young quarterback than this. This is a really, really rare opportunity. Matt Eberflus fumbled something that the rest of the league covets.
Yep. Yeah, and there's this too, and I'm sure Bears fans are sick of hearing this, but if you can get this figured out, you'll never buy a meal in this town ever again. There's a cachet to winning with the charter franchise that, I mean, we haven't seen in 50 years or 40 years, 49 40. Years. And the 85 Bears are happy to tell us about it. But boy, if you get this thing figured out, you're doing something that, number one, nobody could do. The last five head coaches couldn't really do. And number two, something that could make you pretty legendary. So be a really good job. And we'll see exactly what the Bears have in mind for it when Thomas Brown is done. Jason, you can tell by the slowing down of my voice that I'm trying to wrap this thing up. You can follow Jason and I all week and all month and for the rest of the season as we chart where the Bears go from here. Until then, you can check us out on the Sun-Times website, pick up a newspaper, and also read Mark Potash, who had some really good stuff today about the moves. He's Jason, and I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back again real soon.